With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Collider Ladies Night. I am so excited to welcome Jenny Slate to the show for a whole bunch of reasons, but in particular because Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, the feature, is officially one of my favorite movies of 2022.
That's nice. Thank you.
I'm sure you heard a lot of this, but I love the shorts, but I'm a little concerned. I'm like, how are you going to turn this into a full feature and actually sustain the full feature running length? And I mean, you guys just like above and beyond exceeded my expectations.
That's good. I mean, I have heard a few people say that. But of course, it wasn't really a question in our minds because we are like we had the idea and we thought, I don't know. I mean, I don't think we were like cocky about it, but we believed in it. We believed in it. But I think that's the entire thing sort of about Marcel from the beginning is that it would be really hard to pitch it. You know, even the shorts, like if you were to tell someone like, I want to make a short with no plot about like a one-eyed shell who's not a real animal that you've ever known about, who doesn't have any arms and he's stop motion, but his mouth will be regular animation and it's going to be improvised. I mean, people would just be like, I couldn't possibly help you, you know?
This is why you're on that side of the business and I'm on this side of the business. You've got the creative ambition and the confidence in yourself, and I love it. So, first order of business on Collider Ladies Night is we play with the dice tower behind me. I've got 8 random questions here. I give you 3 rolls on this tower, and whatever I land on, those are the questions that we start with.
Cool.
First one up. You got a number 1 to start. This one is called Never Again. What is something that you did for a past project that now makes you say, I'm really glad I tried that at one point, but I don't need to do that ever again?
Well, okay, I really like hot dogs. And you can't like have a hot dog every day if you really want to be healthy. That's just not great for your cholesterol. And you probably will stop liking them as much. So anyway, I think of them as a treat. And there was a movie where I had to eat a hot dog and they were like, here's the spit bucket. And I was like, no, I don't need the spit bucket. I just want to eat a lot of hot dogs because I like them. And I was like, I promise there's no way we're going to do that many takes. Like, we're not going to do more than like, you know, 5 takes of this. And in each take, I'm only eating like a bite. It's going to be the equivalent of 1 hot dog. It's not a big deal. And they were like, are you sure? And I said, yeah, for sure. Obviously, you know, like once the hot dog was in front of me, much like with like a weed brownie, you know, when people are like, just eat half and you're like, yeah, totally just eat half. But then you start eating it and you forget that it's not a brownie and you eat like 3 because you're like, I love brownies. So I ate like a lot of hot dogs and I barfed.
That is an excellent answer to this question.
Never again on that. Use the spit bucket. It just feels so wrong to spit your food out, especially if it's something you like.
That's fair enough. We always play a would you rather game on this show too. And one of my favorite questions to ask is, would you rather have to do a scene where you're eating or a scene where you're running? Because both things, if you have to do it for a million takes, sound like they kind of suck.
Running.
Yeah.
Now I know. Now I know that it's running. Yeah. But you know, in the movie I Want You Back, Charlie Day and I are eating ice cream. And at the time, I made that movie like 10 weeks after I had my daughter. And I was breastfeeding and I was starving. I was always so hungry. And I ate that ice cream. I ate it without stopping. I did not need a spit bucket. I was eating ice cream. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't suggest that in order to eat your food on set, you be like deeply postpartum experience, you know, like breastfeeding, but worked for me.
All right, you got a second roll here.
Okay. This is fun. I love games.
Oh, I'm glad. I have another one if we get to it today. It's a little weird, so brace yourself for that one. This is a number 7. Number 7 is called movie and TV skills. If you could learn a new skill or about a different profession through a role, what would you want it to be and why?
Dance. I would love to be properly taught to, like, you know, really move my body with grace. I've never, you know, I did like some tap and ballet when I was like 3 years old and basically picked my nose for the entire class. So that is what the videos show. Like, truly is me in a leotard with my finger like halfway up my nose and people being like, Jenny, let's go. And me just being like, so I don't know. I think dance, I think like that would be so, so nice to be able to really know how to, you know, like put your body in like a proper scale or like how you hold your hands during different ballet movements. I think that would be really, really nice.
As someone who endlessly scrolls through TikTok now, completely jealous of everyone who has even like the tiniest ounce of dancing skills, I very much understand this. I used to not care, but now that I'm on TikTok all the time, I care.
Is there a lot of dancing on TikTok?
Are you not on TikTok? It's like, I don't want to.
I've never been on TikTok.
It's addictive. It's like, I don't work for TikTok. I'm not a TikTok salesperson. It's that algorithm is spot on. If you want like an endless stream of joy in your day, it really does pinpoint your exact interests. And I get a lot of very great dance videos. I get a lot of cat videos, movie clips, and it just makes me happy.
Well, that's nice. So that seems like that works for you.
Yeah, it does. It does. Still got to learn how to dance though. All right, you got one more roll in the tower.
Okay.
Wrapping this up with a number 6. Oh, that's funny. Wrap gift. What is the most memorable wrap gift you ever received from a project?
Oh, wow. I'm drawing a total blank. Like, oh my gosh. One time Vanessa Bayer gave me a gift certificate to Nordstrom. And it was like the sweetest, most considerate thing. We were filming somewhere where that was like the store. That was like the main store where we were all going. And that's what I need. I need something useful. I need something that's like, this is, now you have no excuses for going to buy your new bra. You know, like I deeply appreciate it. And it's so exactly like sweet and kind.
I'm a big fan of useful things, so I don't consume amass even more clutter than I already have. So useful is important.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, time to get into the meat of it now. So the first question I usually start with is asking someone for the movie, performance, personal experience, whatever it may be, that first made them say, I want to become an actor. But you've worn so many different hats on a wide variety of projects over the years. So what was the very first dream? What is the first thing you envisioned yourself doing in the entertainment industry?
I want to be a movie actor. I really only want to be a movie actor. I end up like doing other things, but, and now that I've written a book, I can't get enough and I'm writing another one. But you know, if I had to like just only do one thing, I would be an actor.
So when you first had that dream, was there anyone in the industry that you looked at and you said to yourself, like, that's where I picture myself when I make it?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of a strange combination, like, and I guess it just went with like the age that I was at and what I had access to. So first I wanted to be like Maria and Susan on Sesame Street, like those ladies on Sesame Street. I wanted to be like them. And then, you know, I wanted to be like Pee-wee when I saw that. And then like a lot of the things that I saw were borrowed from the library. That was like how we watched all our movies before we had a video store in our town. And I loved Judy Garland, just like everyone does. But I love Judy Garland and her grace and her beautiful, deep, warbling voice. How her voice was just like, it felt like it was like so swoopy and liquid. And I loved her fancy old fashioned costumes. Like in Meet Me in St. Louis, it takes place in like 1908 or whatever. And, she has like a corset and a petticoat. And I just assumed that if I were in something, I would also have like a big important costume. I liked things that also reminded me of like what the movie making business might be, although I knew nothing about it. I was kind of taken with all of it, not just that I would be able to perform, but I like the idea of wearing a costume and pretending to be somebody else and being allowed to do that while still being myself.
What would you say is the biggest difference between what you pictured the movie industry or making a movie being like then compared to what happened when you hit your very first set?
Well, you know, then, and what I had learned, because I was just asking all these questions, was like, I was learning about like the golden age of like MGM, you know, like under contract, which, you know, also now we learn was like a hideous time where, you know, it was just like people were way overworked and underpaid and abuse and like, you know, not super glitzy and terrible for women. Terrible for anyone who wasn't like, you know, like a white man. I think like the first job I had, the first set I was ever really on was on Bored to Death. And that was filmed in my neighborhood in Brooklyn. So it was like kind of confusing because I was like, oh, I thought I'd go to like a studio and there, you know, I had always imagined when I was younger, like a painted backdrop, you know, like I just watched Cleopatra for the first time on the airplane. And it's like, oh, you know, it starts and like, it just has a painted background, like of Egypt. Like it's just the craziest, weirdest painted huge tarp. And I was like, that's what I thought it would be like. Instead, it was like, I'm leaving my apartment on Henry Street in Cobble Hill and I'm walking like 7 blocks to the set. Weird. It was weird. It was confusing.
I definitely understand that. So going off of when you graduated from college, so you found a whole lot of success with Big Terrific, but you have these early ambitions to become an actor. So it does make me wonder, it's great to have success in a different realm like that, but was there any fear that, I guess, kind of making a name for yourself in that sector first could have derailed you or could have boxed you in? Because as we all well know, this is an industry that loves to box people into their first big success.
Sure. And also, I think, you know, a lot of people can feel like it's just like easier to know your bearings if you know every single thing around you. And sometimes like people will label people or categorize them just to make the labeler feel safe. And it sometimes doesn't make sense to the people that get labeled because we're all actually very complex. I was afraid. I started my career doing stand-up because it was the only way that I could figure out how to perform. I didn't know how to audition for a play. I didn't know any other actors. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know anyone in the entertainment industry, but I knew my best friend, Gabe Liedman, and he and I did stand up together and we were just talking. And I think it wasn't then that I was like, oh no, what if people don't know that I also want to act? I think it was when I got on SNL because that contract is so long. And like sometimes when you do, you know, repeatedly show up on the television and in the zeitgeist as a comedy person, you just might not get the chance to do drama. And that's like why I was very, very lucky to do the movie Obvious Child, because it gave me both.
Oh, I have questions about that. I did want to ask you one question about SNL, though, because I feel like it can be hard for someone early on in their career to lose an opportunity like that and then not have a knee-jerk reaction, or at least this might be more of a me problem, a knee-jerk reaction where I immediately blame myself and I say I did something wrong. But I read a quote from you and it said that it was a decision of some man who didn't understand me 10 years ago. Was that something that you were fully aware of when it happened? Or is that something that you come to over time with more time to reflect?
I think at the time I felt that, and that I also felt angry at myself just because I had felt that it was a bad fit. Like, I really liked all the people there a lot. I didn't feel that they were a bad fit to be friends with, but I don't know. I was not able to adjust into, for some reason, being like relaxed in that atmosphere. And I think it was, one of the worst things, one of the most brutal things you can do to yourself is to be mad that you're not chill. And that's especially bad for women. You know, it's like, oh, be chill. You know, there's no such thing as being chill. Some people are more relaxed than others. Some people are less sensitive. Some people don't show it. But the chill thing, I just think that's a really like a definition created by a misogynist at some point. And so I think that my own remainders of whatever internalized misogyny I had were like, yeah, you know, if you had just relaxed, you could have just blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, although I liked the people there, I was scared. I don't think I liked it that much. Looking back on it, I also would have done anything to have stayed. You know, like it was like, you know, being in an unhealthy relationship, like where you don't understand that you're not really in love. You're just obsessed or something. Like I just think I didn't understand it all at the time. But one thing that's always been my instinct is to just gear up for resilience, you know, like, and make that be graceful, and make that be as healthy as possible. Like, it's part of resilience for me is not being like, well, screw you, and then getting drunk. You know, like, that is not to me resilience. I think that to me is just like something else. I don't know what that is. Not that I haven't done that, but I try. And I think in that moment really tried to be like, okay, I have to get another job. I have to make sure that I don't feel so bad about myself ever again, and that when I choose jobs in the future, now knowing what happened or something, that I'll just like ask a lot of questions. But some things you can't change what they are. Like, I would never change that I was on that show. And if I was not on it and I was like, I got not a chance to audition for it now, you know, it would be probably really hard to say no. It's a legend. It's a incredible thing in our culture. And I'm lucky to have been on it. It just wasn't the right fit for me.
That's why I ask questions about bumps in the road all the time on this show, because a bump in the road isn't a bump in the road if you look back on it in that way and you figure out how you grew from it and what you learned from it and how it served you well going forward. And it sounds like that was instrumental for you.
Yeah, but you know, it's also important to be like, yeah, it was a bump of the road. Now it's just a part of the road, of a textured road. But a lot of people, I think that like you need to have had some sort of like elevated, transcendent, profound experience with your own embarrassment or loss. And the fact is, like, when that happened, it was so sad for me. And I was so embarrassed. And that's what it looks like. And still it's okay. You know what I mean? Like sometimes, like, all loss is loss. It doesn't always look pretty. In fact, it's like kind of weird if it does. Oftentimes, if it looks pretty while it's happening, it's going to come back around. And as my best friend Quinn says, you're going to have to pay the piper.
That is for sure. So wait, now I need to touch on Obvious Child before we jump too far ahead. So with that one, it is like, obviously, an absolutely fantastic movie. It got a whole lot of award season love. When something like that comes out, can you feel the reception to a movie like that change things for you, where it opens doors to different types of roles that maybe weren't available to you before?
I was very lucky. Yeah, I did feel that. Or at least that people sort of knew more of who I was as a performer and what my capabilities are. I think, you know, if you want to be a working actor with a variety of work that you get to do, you hope for something like that, you know? You hope to be introduced properly, like, for how you are and what your talents are and what's possible. And so, yeah, I did feel that. moment. And it was really fun.
When something like that happens, is there anyone in your corner giving you advice and, you know, saying to you, like, this is a great opportunity where there's a significant amount of momentum. Here is how I suggest you use that momentum to keep it going and to continue getting opportunities that inspire you like this.
You know, I had friends that were just there with me to make sure that I wasn't, you know, that I felt like seen. You know, Gillian Robespierre, who directed Obvious Child, and Elizabeth Holm, who produced it and also produced, like, and co-wrote Landline and my special and Marcel the Jello Shoes On, they were with me. We were really a trio. I felt generally, though, like I had no idea what I was doing in terms of, like, just how everything worked. And you know what the one memory that does stick out for me is that, and I wonder if I maybe I'm the only one that remembers this, but I remember that Elliot Page told me at the time, you should get somebody to help you, you know, like, really get interviews that matter to you. And because I didn't have a publicist, I really didn't know how to enter the business. And that was really helpful for me.
To add on to that, I always love asking this particular question, but when you're either newer to the onset environment or how the business works, is there a seemingly silly, very basic question about the way the industry operates that you wish you had asked sooner?
I guess I would have asked a lot more, do I really have to do this? You know, like, how important is this that I actually show up to this place and do this? Because I like to spend my house time in my house. Like, I'm like a house mouse, you know? And I live in Massachusetts in a small town. I live in an old house by the ocean with my husband and my baby. At that time, I lived in Hollywood. I was kind of told, like, you got to go to this party and that party and that party. And most of them I went to alone. I did not enjoy that. And I just was so afraid of turning things down, but not exactly sure why I was showing up. And that made me feel really foolish. And so now I do what I think is important. I talk to the people that I think are important to, you know, representing my work, or people who will, like, help say, like, the Marcel movie is out and you should see it, because I want people to see it. But, you know, I wish I had known that you don't need to let everything and everyone eat you like you are a meal, because you're not. And I think it's really, really important just to figure out in general, not just in, like, what I do, but, like, why are you interacting with who you're interacting with? What do you want more of? What do you like? What feels like it hurts? Go farther away from what hurts. And then, you know, talk to someone you love about, like, why that does hurt. Figure it out, you know?
You're so true. You're giving me so many little nuggets right now to put in my back pocket and make sure I remind myself of on a regular basis. Before jumping into Marcel full force right now, I this feels like a weird question to be asking you, because I literally said this in my review of the movie. If there were an Academy Award category for voice acting, this is the type of performance that should be nominated. You've done a significant amount of voice acting work over the years.
Yeah.
Do you think it is about time that that particular category is added to the lineup?
Of course I do. Voice performance is deep, focused, and while you could do it, I guess, in any outfit you choose, you have to only use one part of yourself to show everything. You know, you'd especially, like, for me with Marcel, I don't even have a body. Like, if you're doing something where things are already animated, like, you can kind of tailor your voice to the image that you're seeing. But, you know, our animator, our director of animation, Kirsten Lepore, on the Marcel movie did such an incredible job of showing emotion in the body, especially when you think, like, Marcel is not an actor. Every single time his shell moves, even slightly, that's all Kirsten being like, this is the emotion, this is the percentage of the emotion, I'm showing it in this beautiful articulation. But yeah, I do think that. And I think it would encourage a lot of beautiful performances, and I think it would put new focus on animated work. You know, like if more people could see all the Studio Ghibli films, for example, they would expect different things out of their narratives. They would expect different stuff out of their content anyway. And maybe they also would see the world in a nicer way. Like those films are so incredible. They're so open-minded. They're so experimental and such mastery of like the visuals, and the plots are so weird and they're so perfect.
You could not have said it any better. I am a big, big believer that that category should be in there, and casting director should as well. And it boggles my brain that those two, in addition to many other things, but those two in particular, just like how after all this time?
Casting director for sure. I mean, that's basically like being a yenta, you know, like being a matchmaker.
I mean, it kind of is.
Of course it is.
All right. I want to actually, I was going to ask about breaking story on this, but first to follow up on something, what you just said, is there anything you discovered about your craft through all of your voice acting work when you're hyper-focused on one specific part of performing that you find influencing your live action acting now?
I guess just restraint. You know, like Marcel, a lot of times a moment is really punctuated by just like a tiny grunt, you know, I'm a comedian, so restraint is kind of like a harder thing to remember to do. And it's so gratifying to get a point across by doing less. You know, like I always think of, you know, like everything goes from like 0 to 10, but I often forget that like you have like 0, -1, -2, like that the spectrum of emotion goes the other way as well. And now I'm more interested in like in portraying that. Like I think it would be really fun to play a character whose main way of showing what's happening is not by just being like nonstop verbal the way that I tend to be when I'm like on stage, you know?
I get that. All right, so now I want to go back to that. What was the break story moment on this particular script? Was there anything that came to you and Dean and you're like, we got it now. This is how we turn Marcel into a feature film story?
I don't think it was really like that. I mean, and Dean and I as writers, and we have a co-writer, Nick Paley. It's not really how it worked. Like it was such a gradual process, and it was Dean and Nick who were the ones that would listen to the audio and then go through and like transcribe it and then write scenes that needed to go in, that it was like, oh, we need a moment here that's not there, or oh my goodness, you know, the plot needs to go this way. And I don't know, it felt like it was always a string of moments that was like, this needs to happen, because the way the plot was built was like over years of recording, writing, re-recording, improvising. Like there was just a continuous process of engagement there.
This feels like me just being greedy, but have you guys ever considered the idea that Marcel could be well suited for more feature adventures after this? I feel like there's probably a wealth of ideas in terms, like I just love all the little things you come up with in terms of how he gets around the hat. And it's not just cute. Like it's not just cute, the idea that he sleeps on a piece of bread. It's legitimately inspiring that he finds ways to make things work in a seemingly impossible situation to have a fulfilling life. And I just imagine there's a million other examples like that you could explore.
I'm sure there are. And I love being Marcel. And like if somebody were to help us do it in a way that felt right to us, I don't think I would ever say no. But I don't know what that is, you know.
I was reading in the notes that you two deliberately wanted to make this movie on your own and not turn to a studio to make it happen. So now that you do have a feature film under your belt, is that something that you would consider in the future?
That's all. Everything depends on who the people are and what they want and what their mandate is. You know, like if they have a corporate mandate to do something that doesn't seem interesting to me or seems restrictive to me as an artist, you know, maybe that would be a good match for some projects for sure. You know, like I've just written like a really broad comedy that is based off of my love for comedies in the 90s, like Wayne's World and The Addams Family and Pee Wee's Big Adventure and Tommy Boy especially. That's sort of like, it's really character based. It's like the kind of comedy where someone's wearing a wig, you know, and like a character comedy. And that's something that I would love to make with a studio. And that's because like it's suited for that type of environment and those types of notes. Because Marcel like lives in Dean and my hearts and psyches, we just like really need to be very careful because either it feels good or it doesn't, and there is not much in between. But I certainly have faith that, you know, we could find someone who would be a pleasure to work with.
Whatever process is working for you two on this, keep at it, because this movie is exceptional. Does it look like someone wants to kick me out in that room? Do we have time for a 2-minute game?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, so I'm going to warn you. This game is absolutely ridiculous. It's going to be silly, stupid. I don't know if it's going to work, but we're going to try. So we're going to do a Marcel Duchamp version of our game, My Movie, My Way. So it's a whole bunch of questions, and we're going to build a character for you right now. If you, like real you, could be an object, what object would you pick and why?
If I could be an object, I guess I'd be a xylophone because I really love the sound of all the bing bongs, and I like how the planks of the xylophones, like especially for children, are often painted beautiful colors.
An instrument is such a good idea. I played this with some friends last night and they're picking like a beer glass so they could be cleaned and refilled and bring people to, I don't know. Music is such a smart idea. All right, next question. Would your object have googly eyes like in Everything Everywhere?
I love googly eyes. I think it's really nice to put them on anything you can. So yeah.
Okay, so your xylophone has eyes. Now, yeah. What other inanimate object is your xylophone's best friend?
Let's see. I guess my xylophone's best friend probably be like a spray bottle. I just really like how they are. Like, I like that it's like controlled, and I've always liked like, you know, pulling the little thing, and I think they're really fun.
Okay, so who voices your spray bottle best friend?
Let's see, I guess, who would I pick? Oh God, that's so hard. David Byrne.
Both of your objects, they get to be on the TV show of their dreams. What TV show is that?
Oh, cool, cool. I guess they would be on a morning talk show.
Okay, so this all builds to the culmination of this really ridiculous game very well, because Marcel has very important messages to send out to the world via his own story. So your xylophone gets to go on this show. What kind of impression does your xylophone want to make on the world, given how your xylophone fits in it?
I think my xylophone want to be a problem solver. It would be nice for the show to kind of be like, people come with their everyday problems and the xylophone and the spray bottle kind of talk it out and they figure out what to do. I think that would be nice. And then maybe you could call the show What to Do.
I'm sold. I'll buy this show. I'll fund it. If you need a studio, it's right here. I'll make it happen. Right. I told you that was going to be ridiculous, but it'll look really cute in the end, I promise.
Seriously, I've got to say, I would make that show. I think that's really good.
I mean, you have me thinking nonstop about how inanimate objects could inspire me and change the world now. So the possibilities are truly endless.
That's nice. I'm glad.
All right, I got to let you go now. Huge thank you for your time today. Big congratulations on everything you accomplished. Thank you for everything you shared. And I am rooting so hardcore for Marcel, the Shell with Shoes On, the feature film. Everybody out there, please go rush out and see it. Trust me, it is wonderful.
Thanks so much. This was really fun. I liked all your games.
Hey, Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.